Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, November 12th, 2016. This is episode 1339. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Epson's new Eco Tank printers with Epson's line of Super Tank. All-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. And by Sonic. The Tech Guy podcast is literally brought to you by Sonic, Twit's 10 gigabit fiber internet service provider. Join Sonic's internet revolution as they bring fast, affordable internet, phone, and TV to homes and businesses all over California. Visit Sonic.com/Twit to sign up for service and receive your first month free. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, digital thingamajiggies, virtual reality helmets, all that jazz, smart cars. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still call. You can use Skype to reach us. 8888-ASK-LEO. So since we last met, there was an election, and we have a new president-elect. And I'm not going to get political, don't worry, because that's not what we talk about here, except to the extent that politics impinges on technology. Actually, one of the interesting stories of the week was the accusation. You know, there was a lot of blame, of course, when one side loses and then it has to go around blaming everybody for losing. And the one that surprised me a little bit was Facebook. We blame – it's all Facebook's fault. and I was trying to understand what people mean when they say it's Facebook's fault. I gather, and I didn't see a lot of this on Facebook. I use Facebook every day. Facebook's one of those things, I kind of don't like it, but I use it, you know? It's not, I don't like it that that's how I stay in touch with family and friends and keep up on what's going on. It's very useful. I kind of feel the same way about Twitter. I don't know what that is. Do you have that same? I think a lot of people kind of have that same feeling of, and yet we use it. So I don't know what to say about that. I use it every day, and I did not see a lot of fake news. Now, I wanted to keep my feed. You know, I go back and forth. Sometimes I just make it so I just want to hear from family and friends. I don't want to hear anything else. But during the election cycle, which has been a long one, a year and a half election cycle, I wanted to kind of keep up on all the candidates. So I followed all the candidates. I guess you like them, right? I really wish I could just say followed instead of liked, but I liked all the candidates, including the 17 Republican nominees, the two Democratic nominees, and the independent parties, just because I wanted to see that content filtered in through. And I didn't see – so I guess that's a real signal to Facebook. You're interested in politics and political stuff, but I didn't see a lot of fake news. But apparently – thank you. According to some – Facebook's been, you can't say, you can't blame Facebook, can you? People on Facebook have been putting up a lot of fake news, right? Not like the internet's not full of fake news. That's why we have sites like Snopes.com. I mean, after all, haven't we always? I mean, gosh, I used to get my email all the time. Bill Gates will send everybody $50 if they just buy, Windows or something. Remember that one? So this, to me, this is nothing new. But I guess there was a lot of that going on in Facebook. And I don't know how you can blame Facebook. I mean, what is Facebook supposed to do? Are they supposed to vet every story you post and then put a little sign saying, a little arrow saying fake news? And sometimes, some of it's obviously made up, but some of it's like, maybe not, well, who knows, fake-ish. Sort of. Then what do they do? Mark Zuckerberg, when asked, So personally, I think the idea that fake news on Facebook, which is a very small amount of the content, influence the election in any way, I think that's a pretty crazy idea. Voters make decisions based on their lived experience. Well, I don't know about that. I think that's a pretty crazy idea, too. I'm not sure why voters make the decisions they do, but it's a variety of things, including the news that they get. But don't we all understand that the internet is full of all sorts of stuff, including real and fake? I don't think anybody, I mean, it's even a standing joke. You know, oh, I know it's true. I read it on the internet. Har, 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 hardy, har. We all know that the internet is loaded with fake and real news. In fact, I've advocated for some time in both, you know, in my own personal life, because I've been on a school board and on and publicly, that the most important thing we can teach kids today is not how to keyboard or how to use Microsoft Word, but how to use their minds, their critical thinking, to read and understand stuff on the internet and to vet it, to consider the source and so forth. The days of, you know, you would say, oh, well, I heard it on CBS, the Tiffany Network, or I read it in the New York Times, the paper of record. Those days are long gone. And, you know, it may even be, I think we're kind of learning, they weren't exactly always real news either. You know, I mean, they had more kind of maybe some journalistic standards that they, you know, things like two sources and so forth. But so you didn't, the most extreme fake news you didn't see there. I think that probably we're on balance in better shape to have, because we have more sources. The trick is, and I do think we saw this, and this isn't Facebook's fault. The trick is to broaden your sources so that you see a broader variety of stuff. That's what I did. I tried to follow all the candidates, because I wanted to see what everybody was saying. And sometimes I'd read stuff that made me froth at the mouth and steam out of the ears. But that's probably not a bad thing. Keeps your blood flowing. And you need to know what people are thinking and saying. So I think the key is really to, when you're looking at anything on the internet, whether it's Facebook, your email, Twitter, a news site, is to kind of keep your radar out, your antenna. And I think we need to teach kids this. And I think we'll have access to more information, broader information, a broader variety of voices. They call the negative side of that the filter bubble. There's a famous book by Eli Pariser called The Filter Bubble. The idea being that all the algorithms on Facebook and Google and Twitter are designed to show you stuff you agree with, because you spend more time on stuff you agree with, right? And that's all their goal is, to get you to spend more time. So search results, Facebook posts, all over time kind of begin to move in the direction of things you already believe. And I think that's probably true. Aren't we all more comfortable in reading stuff that we agree with than stuff we disagree with? I think to avoid that filter bubble, the good news is it's really easy to avoid it. Just keep your eyes open, and no matter how good the filter bubble, you're still going to see stuff from other people. How many people unfollowed people on Facebook because they didn't agree with what they were saying, right? I saw a lot of people posting, I'm going to unfollow you. You keep posting these political posts. I'm going to unfollow you. Friends and family. No, I don't want to see that stuff. So I think that we understand that a lot of, maybe who knows, even the majority of stuff that's floating in over the transom via the internet is bogus, made up, created by somebody with an axe to grind or a strong position one way or the other. And it's up to us, and we got to teach our kids this very important skill going forward, to vet it, understand it, consider the source. And I think you can do that. I think our kids can do that. So I kind of agree with Mark that fake news, however much there has been on Facebook, and I gather I didn't see as much as is there, fake news is not the problem. Maybe hearing the other side may be something we could help us, right? At least to understand what we agree or don't agree with. We could talk. I didn't want to get too political. So one of the big stories, and I know everybody's been asking me to comment on other shows and other networks about Silicon Valley's reaction to Trump's election. And, you know, the reaction is pretty mixed at this point. There's good and bad. The tech industry is just, I think the tech industry, which is predominantly liberal, although not 100% so. In fact, very famously, Peter Thiel, a very famous venture capitalist who gave Facebook its first influx of money, was a huge Trump supporter and is serving on Trump's transition team now. So it's a mixed bag. Some of the things we expect in the new administration are good for Silicon Valley. Some are not. And I think everybody's just saying, well, let's wait and see. Anyway, enough of that. Let's talk tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. I forgot to mention the big story. Facebook killing everybody on Facebook. They have a switch they can flip on your account if you pass away. In fact, you can go into your settings and set this up, which I think is a good idea, that should you pass away, your next of kin is allowed to notify Facebook, and they will turn. What they do is they don't kill your account. They keep it around. This is really, I mean, we're in such new territory now, right? We keep it around and memorialize it. They call it a memorial account, and they put a text, you know, Leo's gone. But his friends and family have many things to say about him, and you can put it here, something like that. And was it yesterday or the day before everybody woke up? Everybody went on Facebook within a 15 or minute or half an hour period and found that they had passed away. I saw a lot of it on Twitter. I did not visit Facebook at that time, or I would have grabbed a screenshot, of course. Facebook immediately said, that was a mistake. We flipped the switch and you're not dead. Congratulations. Congratulations. But now you know what. I think it's kind of cool. Don't you? I mean, I always thought it'd be kind of interesting to go to my own funeral ahead of time just to see what people are saying after, you know. Well, now, you know, you could kind of, Facebook gave you a little taste. Did you... Heather Hammond, did you get a little taste of what it would be like to pass away?
I didn't.
Yeah, I missed it. I didn't go to it soon enough. I wish I had.
I stayed away from Facebook for a little.
Do you not like Facebook?
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't think it's unusual to say I don't like it and still use it.
Well, I have to for work so much, and I see my own page, and once in a while, you know, there's something cool in the feed first, and then I flip over to the other account.
I always feel like my status should be, permanent status should be Facebook, I can't quit you. You know, I just can't. I want to. It's like an abusive boyfriend. I want to get away, but I can't. And really, it's the way I see what's going on with family and friends. And
it is really great. I, for instance, missed that some friends packed up and moved from the East Bay to Ireland.
You would know otherwise.
Had I been paying attention, yeah. I would have seen that and maybe even gone to the going away party.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's another thing. Yeah. I think, you know, I wonder. Sometimes they say now that young people are no longer using Facebook. I don't know if that's the case. I feel like everybody uses. Facebook's quarterly results came out last week. 1.79 billion active users. Almost 2 billion active users. That's monthly, every month. And daily users was, you know, still well over a billion. So somebody's using it. Anyway, you probably are busy answering phone calls, so I won't bother you. But maybe you should tell me which one I should start with. How about that?
Just as certainly as we'll all die, we all pay taxes. So let's talk to Seth in Long Beach.
Oh, wow. Hi, Seth. Thank you, Heather.
Hi there, Leo. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I hate to stay political, but the last week I've noticed a trend in some California cities where they're eyeballing taxing streaming services such as Netflix, Hulu, etc., specifically those services.
Wow, I hadn't seen that. That's scary.
Yeah, and I've been digging around into it, and there are apparently somewhere around 47 Californian cities trying to look at taxing this to, well, you know, recoup some of the money from cord cutters.
Apparently Pasadena has already agreed to do that. The finance department of the city of Pasadena decided to apply a 9.4% tax on videos. 9.4%
exactly.
On video subscribers, Netflix, HBO, and Hulu. That begins January 1. And as you mentioned, 45 other cal. That is just horrible. What a grab.
And the deeper that I dig into this, I've noticed there are other states in the U.S. I believe Pennsylvania was one of them that has already kind of started doing this.
So I gather that they're already taxing the cable companies.
Yes, and they want to use that same legislation to tax streaming services as if...
By the way, 9.4% on each of them. So if you have a $10 Netflix bill, you're going to be paying almost $11 next year. HBO Go, you're going to be paying another $1.50. That's going to add up, isn't it?
Very, very quickly.
So normally you'd wonder, well, how can they just kind of unilaterally announce this? Well, as you say... They claim the voters have already voted on taxing the cable services, and this is just another way of getting it. I agree with you. Are they claiming they're losing revenue because of cable cutters, cord cutters?
Yes.
See, I find that hard to believe because, even if you're a cord cutter, you're still paying for the internet, aren't you? Maybe
exactly.
I guess they can't tax that, or
well, they already have a tax on the internet. Is the problem? They're taxing both the internet, and now they're trying to tax the content that you're receiving on the internet. And so it begs the question: well, okay, if I do feel comfortable paying the tax, what happens when I go on a trip and I'm across the country? Do I pay a different tax, or do I continue paying the tax for my home? But even then, that just opens the door to tax everything individually on the internet. And that's exponential at that point.
It's interesting. I don't... I mean, utilities are taxed, right? So your power is taxed. Your phone is taxed. That's really interesting. And apparently the cities, at least in California, are saying, no, you voted on this in 2000, 16 years ago. You approved this as a general utility tax. That's really interesting. I don't, I'll tell you a couple of things. First of all, it feels to me, are they going to pick and choose which services they tax and don't? If that's the case, that is highly problematic because they're putting it's a net neutrality issue. They're putting a burden on Netflix and HBO, but I'm a streamer, right? I stream our content, this show, and 20 other shows into people's homes. They're not going to tax my stuff?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Doesn't that give me an advantage over Netflix? Not that I'm against this idea, but that would be a strict violation of net neutrality. Now, I wonder if the FCC would weigh in on this. They've been strong proponents of net neutrality. They've even got regulations promoting net neutrality. I would imagine at least until January 20th, the FCC might have something to say about this. It's pretty clear that, at least from his tweets, that the president-elect is not a... I hate it that we have to read his tweets, but according to his tweets, the president-elect is not a fan of net neutrality. So... we'll see what happens after January 20th. But up to right now, I would think this would be a strict violation, an exact violation of net neutrality. The idea of net neutrality is all bits coming into your home should be treated equally so that nobody has an advantage over anybody else. Shouldn't cost you more to get bits from Netflix than it costs to get bits from somebody else. By the way, we're seeing the opposite happen with the cell phone companies, which are charging nothing for... You know, T-Mobile charges nothing for the established streaming services, but charges for me, in effect, by having me count against your cap. And I'm against it in both cases. All bits should be treated equally. We'll keep an eye on it. Thanks for reminding me about it, Seth. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. But before we do any more, I need to tell you about the amazing Epson EcoTank printers. You know, those have changed my life. I love it. We have an EcoTank here. Lisa has it in our office. We have one at home, the 4550. And I set it up for both cases, and I loved it because, you know, you get the printer, and of course it's the great precision core engine with the 40 million drops of ink per second and the crisp black and white printing, the two-sided, no warm-up time, you know, all the great things. It's a all-in-one, so you can scan, copy, fax, print, color, black and white. But when I opened up the box inside, there's bottles of ink. bottles of ink, and it was easy. If you look at the side of the printer, you can see it's got a little tank. That's why they call it the Eco Tank. And I filled them up, didn't take any time, turned on the printer, paired it with our Wi-Fi. I love that because it's, you know, wireless printing from everything, including your Apples and your all your stuff. And then I don't have to, I'm not going to have to think about this. And I'm the tech guy for my family, right? So I'm not going to, and you know, if it doesn't work, Lisa's going to call me, right? I don't have to think about it for 2 years. And when I do go to the store and buy more ink in the year 2018, it's going to cost like 80% less. These inks are so affordable. So this is the 4550, 11,000 black and white pages or 8,500 color pages. It's the equivalent of about, what did I say, 35 or 40 cartridges. Auto two-sided. I use that all the time to save paper. By the way, the ET4550 was named CES's 2016 Innovation Award winner. 2016 Small Business Windows Printer of the Year as well. As they say, an unbeatable combination of convenience and value. And I thank Epson for doing the right thing for their users. The Eco Tank. There's the big one. That's the big puppy. It takes the packs of ink. Saves you even more. So to find out more, go to Epson.com/EcoTank. Transform the way your home, your office, your work group prints for the best combination of ease and value. Turn to the Epson EcoTank printers, EPSON.com/EcoTank. And we thank Epson for years of great printing for me. I've been an Epson user forever, since the beginning, and for making doing the right thing for their customers and making the EcoTank printer. Love it. Love it. Somebody in the chat room reminded me that it's a federal law that the internet cannot be taxed. The Internet Taxed Freedom Act, which was passed way back in 1998, and has been, for that was a 10-year moratorium, you remember, and then we had periodic extensions, eventually became a permanent law in February 2016. The Trade Facilitation and Trade Enforcement Act of 2015 enshrined it in law. So let me tell you, and I think this would be, I'm no lawyer, but the law bars federal, state, and local governments from taxing internet access. So they can't tax your internet access. That's different than taxing Netflix, though. But this second part, from imposing discriminatory internet-only taxes such as bit taxes, bandwidth taxes, and email taxes. It also bars multiple taxes on e-commerce. Doesn't bar state sales tax, as you know. I don't know. You know, I guess a court would have to decide whether this applies to the city of Pasadena taxing Netflix. Interesting. By the way, Scott Wilkinson is not going to be here. He is taking the week off, but he'll be back to talk home theater with us next week if you're tuning in for Scott Wilkinson's segment. But that just gives me more chance to talk with you, including Mike in Monrovia, California. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm great. Welcome.
Thank you. I have an HP Envy Touch Smart M7 computer, a notebook PC that I purchased in about June of 2014. And it works just great. Everything's fine, even now, except for the fact that the space bar is not functioning. And the only reason is I took the key off.
Yeah.
And there's a small rubber part. It's round, shaped like a hat. No more.
Right. That's the contact.
Meters in diameter.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's basically cracked in two.
Oh. You must pound that space bar.
And so I called HP a couple of days ago, and they told me my choices are I can buy a new keyboard. I can't just buy a key. I have to buy a whole new keyboard for about $89, or I can pay over $200, including the keyboard, the whole new keyboard, and have it installed.
You just need one switch. This is, by the way, a trend in the electronics world. It's easier for them to replace parts, whole parts. So, you know, if something goes bad on your motherboard and you could easily resolder it, they would just replace the whole thing. It's a laptop, right? So it's integral to the computer, right? It's not a separate keyboard.
That's correct.
Yeah. Golly, I would guess that you could get that part and maybe even replace it yourself. Because it is, that little thing is just, there's usually on a space bar, there's two of them. Is that right?
Well, there's just the one.
Just the one in the middle? Yeah.
Right.
So what that's the switch. So when you can easily see how that works mechanically. You depress the key and that little hat squishes inside. There's an electrical connection that makes the contact when you squish it. So all you need to do is replace the hat. And right. I bet you could do this yourself, either by going to eBay and finding somebody else with a TouchSmart M7 they're willing to sell cheaply, or go to maxkeyboard.com. Thank you, Dr. Mom. Maxkeyboard.com on the web sells keyboard parts.
Oh.
Yeah. In fact, really? I see some little hat switches. I don't know if it would be the right switch for you. That's the only issue, is it's got to physically fit in that, you know, place. But I would call them and check with them, because it's a dollar. It's $1 for a keyboard
right.
switch. $1.
I figured.
Yeah. So the key is, they sell, you know, these, we talked last week about cherry switches, which all the gamers love. They sell the individual cherry switches. I don't know if they sell the dome switches. Those are called dome switches that your HP keyboard has. But it'd be worth a check anyway. MaxKeyboard.com. Okay. And then eBay, sometimes you'll find people who buy used broken computers and, you know, sell them for parts, like a pick and pull, right? For cars, you go to the pick and pull, right? And you pull out.
Yeah.
We need one of those for that, because this is a cheap $1 switch. Lumpy's also right. telling me, if you go to YouTube and search for your HP Envy Touch Smart M7, there may be videos on YouTube. You produce amazing for this, showing you how to replace that keyboard yourself.
Yeah, that would help.
Yeah. Definitely. So I think you can do this without an expensive. But that's how it is nowadays. They frequently want you to replace large chunks rather than fix individual parts. Isn't
right.
that too bad? Yeah.
Yes.
But it's a $1 part. I can fix this.
Yeah, I'm going to try.
Yeah, good. So there's a couple of places to look. And that is, you know, that absolutely is easy to fix. It's just a switch. Switches wear out. Keyboard gets pounded heavily, right? That's every
yeah.
word. And I'm surprised they only have one switch there. That's of course, that's why it wore out. So I think you could probably get that fixed. You need a pick and pull for keyboards. There's an idea. It's kind of a Mad Max future, right? Where we just, iFixit.com, somebody suggesting that. That's a good place to go to learn how to fix things. And some they sell some parts. They might sell keyboard parts. The problem is, I'm thinking that HP switch is specific. You know, if you're lucky, it's the same switch HP uses on all their keyboards, in which case you're going to easily be able to replace it. Depends how specific it is. iFixit.com. They call themselves the what do they call themselves? The manual, computer manual for everybody. It's got actually not just computers, it manuals for everything and tools and parts. They even have, you could fix Happy Meal toys. They have the tools and the parts. If you got a crying kid, mommy, my Happy Meal toy broke, you can go to iFixit.com and they'll tell you how to fix it. they were a sponsor. Are they still? I think they might still be a sponsor of some of our podcasts. So I'll give you a disclaimer there. I don't know. Does that change your opinion? I don't think so. Dana, Upland, California. Hi, Dana. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Dana.
Hello, Dana.
I wonder if Dana went to sleep. Let me put you on hold, Dana. Heather will check in and see what's going on. Meanwhile, Perry in Ocean Beach is wide awake. Hi, Perry.
Hey, how you doing today, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I've listened to you more years than I probably want to admit at this point, but always enjoy catching your show every week.
You know, thank goodness I have that portrait in my basement that's aging instead of me. I could keep doing this for another 20 years. Radio's great that way, right? As long as your voice doesn't age, you're always 35.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm going to hang in there with you that whole time, as a matter of fact.
I'm waiting for the day when I start chanting like this. What can I do for you, Perry?
Well, you know what? Although I'm kind of a geek and I've been in computers and I do cybersecurity and things like that, I just really haven't paid attention to smart watches. I'm at the point
now. You're not alone. What? You're not alone. The whole world's ignoring them.
Well, I'd like to find something that, has the functionalities I need. I really don't need a cell phone built in there. I'm looking through a lot of reviews. A lot of
don't, yeah, because that means it's got to be massive just to hold the battery and the radios for that.
Yeah.
Samsung does make a couple with a built-in cellular calling. Usually a smartwatch is considered a companion to your smartphone. And the smartwatch you use will depend considerably on the smartphone you're using. I'll tell you what, we have to take a break. Would you hang on? Because I would like to help you with this. I happen to have a large, and I'm sad to say, growing collection of smartwatches. I'm kind of an expert on a field nobody cares about. We'll talk more when we get back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your geek man. Handling your calls at 8888-ASK-LEO, our website where all the information goes. In fact, thanks to the chat room, we have a ton of information on where you can buy replacement parts for your HP keyboard at the website. That's the kind of thing the website's so great for, because you can't write all that down when you're listening to the radio. But we put it all on the website at techguylabs.com. I'm the tech guy. This is my lab. techguylabs.com. 8888-ASK-LEO, techguylabs.com. Oh, one more thing. IRC, our chat room, irc.twit.tv, if you'd like to join us in the chat room. They're talking about right now in the chat room, one of our viewers, or listeners, I guess, has the new NES Classic Nintendo made. It looks just like the old, like a miniature version of the old NES game. It's not the Famicom, is it? It's the later one. And it has all the games, you know, Frogger and stuff built into it, connected to your TV. I'm not somebody who grew up with the NES, so I don't have the nostalgia factor. And if you don't have the nostalgia factor and you look at these games, you go, yeah, I don't. Why would you want to play that? I remember because I had an Atari 2600 as a Ute. And I remember when they released a very nice version of Pitfall. I think it might even be for iOS. I can't remember. Atari released Pitfall. They hid in the Pitfall a Easter egg that was the original game. So I showed my son, Henry, who at the time was probably 8 or 9. I said, look, Henry, this is what games used to look like. He said, ew. 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 Why would you want to play that? But, of course, as Henry grows up and he shows his kid, you know, Call of Duty, Infinite Warfare, and his kid's got the VR visor on, and he's immersive, and he's in the middle of a battle. The kid's going to say, why would you play that, Dad? That's lame. Before the break, we were talking with Perry in Ocean Beach. He wants a smartwatch. Smartwatch.
Yes, I do, Leo. Yes, I do.
So what are your, because there are, I'll give you, there are a few things a smartwatch does. You mentioned phone. Forget it. That's crazy. Talk.
Agreed.
If you think of a smartwatch as a companion, a sidecar to your smartphone, the couple of things that it does that are useful are notifications, and some of the fancier ones will let you respond to text messages and stuff like that, and then fitness. Those are the two big categories. Which of those are you interested in?
Well, actually, both. Okay. I'd like to have both. And you mentioned before a lot of it could be depending on my phone. Well, I have the S7.
Okay, so you're an Android guy. So there is, you can use an Apple Watch, but in a very limited fashion. The Apple Watch is not a good choice for you. So you could, there is, of course, Android Wear, which is designed for Android phones. And Google does the same thing with Android Wear that they do with Android devices. They make and offer an operating system and a spec, but then allow other companies to manufacture it. And there's everybody from the hipster watch company Nixon to LG and others who make these watches. And they're all functionally identical, but cosmetically different. Then there's also the category like the Fitbits that offer some of those features. So I'm wearing right now today, depends on my whim of the day, but I'm wearing and it works with my Android or iOS device, a Fitbit Blaze, which is not a particularly attractive watch. It's less expensive. It's a little over $100. I can't remember the exact price. Maybe $150. Less expensive than an Android watch. It is primarily an activity monitor, but it will take notifications from the phone. So I can pop up notifications. I can control music playback on it. It has 5 or 6 day battery life. Some people really prize battery life. So the Android Wear watches and the Apple Apple Watch are 1 day watches. You charge them every night. So the Fitbit watches are 5 to 7 day watches. The screen is hard to read in bright daylight, but it's very good at. It's one of the few that is a decent heart rate monitor, if that's important.
It is.
And it will use the GPS in your phone. It doesn't have its own GPS, unlike the Apple Watch.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't carry it on board. A lot of the things I've read, some of them say, yeah, GPS, some of them, you know, all the different options. And it just kind of gets confusing after a while. What is your thoughts about the Samsung S2?
I think it's a beautiful watch. They've got they've done some really interesting things. They use the bezel. You turn the bezel as a control. I think that's a good way to do it. You know, the challenge with the watch is you have a very small screen and limited interface capability. And Apple's, I think, overdone it with the interface. It's very hard. They step back with Series 2, but it's the Apple Watch, they have two buttons and force touch and all these different ways to interact with it. And I don't think they solved it. And then Android Wear is very, maybe too simple, you know. You swipe up, swipe left, swipe right. That's pretty much it. So interface is a challenge, and I think Samsung's done a good job with this new S2. It does have GPS in it. We're going to see a new Android Wear platform early next year that might be a good solution. But if you're using a Samsung device, as you are, I think the Samsung watches are probably a very good idea. Don't get the, as you point out, the bad idea to get the watch that has the phone in it. Because that's just...
I kind of got that idea early.
Yeah, it's just a drain on battery life, and you're not going to talk on the phone to your watch.
And I'm not going to pay the fee add it to my...
Yes, it's another phone line. That's right. So I'm actually quite fond of what Samsung has done. The only issue I have with Samsung is it's Samsung only. So you're kind of now, and everybody does this, I wish they didn't, you're locked in to Samsung, right?
Yeah.
But if you know you're going to get the S8, and the new S8, by the way, the rumors are making it looks pretty good. That'll be out in the spring. And, you know, they have the Classic, and then they have the more recent ones, and they have Health as, you know, focus. And so I would say this is probably the right choice for you. In terms of functionality. Yeah, I would absolutely look
okay.
at it. Yeah.
Okay, well, do you know the difference? I've seen there's S2 and S3.
Yeah, the new one let me look at the spec difference. I've actually played with both. I like the S3. Let me just see what you're going to... Yeah,
it always comes down to, is it worth that extra $50, $100 between the two?
Yeah, and this is where I'm trying to remember what's new in the S3. S3 uses the bezel, which I really like. I would say go with the S3. I don't think... This does have phone capability, but I think it's like the Apple Watch where you still need the phone next to it.
Okay.
I think this is a good choice. If I had a Samsung phone as my daily driver, I probably would use the Gear S3. That would be my probable choice. And if you wanted to save money, the S2. But the S3, both of these don't use Android. They're not Android Wear. They're Tizen, which is Samsung's own operating system. That's a plus and a minus. It's a plus because, I don't know why it would be a plus. It's a minus because you have to use Samsung. You're relying on Samsung. Big company with lots of resources. They do a good job.
Yeah, and I've been Samsung since S3.
Yeah, so you're committed to it.
I was a Motorola, so yeah. Prior to that. And Samsung just works for me.
Well, then absolutely. Look at the S3. The Gear S3 is, to my mind, as good as any watch out there. And if you are the only negative to it, I wanted the Frontier. I just because I had to give back my Note 7. I You see how you're locked in? You get locked in. But I think they've really – I love the turning bezel. I only wore it for a couple of weeks, but I was very impressed with it. Very impressed.
Awesome. Well, hey, I appreciate the guidance and bringing a little bit of clarity to quite a muddled arena of information.
It's crazy. So. And I'm going to put a link in the show notes. The chat room is Uncle Bick in the chat room has given me a link to an article on Android Authority comparing directly the S2 and the S3.
I see it there. Thank you.
Yeah, that would probably be helpful. I don't think there's a huge difference. It looks like the S3 is a little thicker, which means more battery life. They're very similar. It's kind of an evolution as opposed to a revolution.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Neil, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Enjoy your new watch. I happen to like smartwatches. I like wristwatches in general. None of the smartwatches are as attractive as the best wristwatches. Frankly, is even the best Timex. But they are kind of useful. And if you're a fitness buff, having a heart rate monitor and something to count your calories and your steps, I like that. It really incents me to get more exercise. So that's, for me, the main reason I use it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, virtual reality, smart cars, and all of that jazz. 8888. Ask Leo, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S., or Canada, outside that area. You can still call, use some VoIP solution like Skype, and call that number. It should be toll-free. 8888-ASK-LEO. Rick is in Torrance, our next call. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
My question for you is, I know with backups like Carbonite, you can set it to where it automatically backs up your computer.
Right.
I use Google Drive, and right now I've got a desktop folder that I back all my documents into. Plus, I also open up Google Drive and make a copy. And
I love that.
There.
So I Google Drive, Dropbox.
Making a copy.
Yeah.
Can they automatically back it up?
Well, so understand the difference between Google Drive, Dropbox, Box. A lot of these solutions, they have a single OneDrive, single synced folder. And as long as you don't mind putting everything into the synced folder, it will back up automatically. So with Google Drive, you have to put everything into the Google Drive folder, and it will automatically be backed up. You know, make a change locally, it'll be backed up to Google Drive and vice versa. Same thing with Dropbox. It's not a full site, full computer backup, because you have data in other places as well.
Mm-hmm.
But for a lot of people, that's all they need, and I think that's a perfectly fine solution. If you're saying, all I really want to back up is my documents, for instance, and I use Google Docs, and that's my primary, word processor spreadsheet, and so it will always be saved in the Google Drive, then that's a very good way to do it. It's how people on Chromebooks do it, right? They don't ever have to. If you have a Chromebook, you don't worry about backup because you're not storing anything locally anyway.
Right.
And it's kind of the same on a PC, but what's backed up is not everything. Now, in order for that to work on Google Drive, you have to download the Google Drive app. I don't know if you've done that or not.
Yeah.
So that's it's just like Dropbox. That's what's doing the syncing and allows you to have a local folder that duplicates what's on your Google Drive. And then it will sync either way. So
basically, I need to... Like, if I've got a document that I just finished and I want to save it, I need to actually put it into the Google Drive folder.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Is
this will not look at my computer and say, okay, this...
No, because it's not backup. It's just synchronizing a folder. Same thing with Dropbox. Same thing with OneDrive. All of these are solutions that synchronize an individual folder.
Uh-huh.
Now, as long as you keep everything in that you want to save in that folder, that's fine. But there's things you probably have on your drive that aren't in that folder. Your internet back.
I'm a nut. I've saved everything. I want a duplication of my computer.
Well, no, so that's where you want Carbonite, because, for instance, your internet bookmarks, they're not going to be ever stored in the Google Drive folder.
Right.
Saved games. There's lots of stuff, lots of data that you create. If you have a photos folder that's not in the Google Drive folder, those photos are not being backed up. Now, there is a solution in that case. You can use Google's Photos, and Google Photos has an app. There's also a Google Music app. So you can piecemeal together a solution with Google that will back up most of your stuff. You still think about that is you are going to pay for it because the more you pay for storage on Google.
Right, right.
I happen to have a lot because I bought a Chromebook Pixel. That gave me a terabyte. But then a year later, it went back, and I only have 500 gigabytes now. I only have 250 gigabytes now. Uh-oh. So, I like it. I think Google Drive is great. If you're on a Chromebook, it's a fabulous solution. And generally, if you get a Chromebook, you get 100 gigabyte storage with the Chromebook because that's now your drive. But for a PC, a Mac or Windows machine or a Linux machine, I think you certainly should do that. But you remember, you always want to do belt and suspenders of backup. You should probably have a solution that backs up other stuff as well.
Yeah, I've got Google Drive, I've got a external backup, and then I've got my Mac. And I try to keep,
that's great.
A copy in every one of those.
Yeah.
And I use a terabyte on Google Drive. So for 10 bucks a month, at least I can save up everything I've got and not worry.
I have to say this very handy. Amazon also offers backup for photos. I mean, everybody's doing this now. But I just got Google's new phone, the Pixel, and it backs up an unlimited number of photos to Google Drive. They don't ding you for storage. So I move all my photos to my Pixel phone and let it back them up because that's, unlimited photo backup. That's a good deal.
That Pixel, how do you like it? Because that
love it.
Was my next step. I'm planning on getting one.
Love it. Well, if you're all in on Google, this is the Google phone. It's an Android device.
Right.
And I am very impressed with the camera. It's a great phone. It's very snappy, beautiful screen. I'm using the little one, the 5-inch. They make a big one, too, a 5.5-inch screen. I had that for a couple of weeks. I think this is a great phone. I'm very happy with this. This is my, kind of my go-to now.
Yeah, I'm planning to leave Verizon. I've had a Note 5 with them, and they've replaced it 4 times in about 8 months. Every time something goes wrong with it, and of course they give you a refurbished one.
Yep.
And they act like that's new.
But and then it goes bad again.
Batteries been used, different things, and they keep on going bad on me.
Yeah.
So I'm planning to leave them and go with Google all the way.
Good. I think for Android, there really is nothing that beats the Google Pixel. They've really done a very, very nice job with this.
All right.
Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. As long as we're talking backup, I guess it'd be a good time to do an Carbonite ad, huh? We'll go to Paul in Lake Forest, California next. He wants to unconnect his Mac from his network storage. It's too much backup. Can you ever have too much backup? I guess you could. Carbonite's kind of just right backup, right? Here's why I like Carbonite. It's automatic. You don't have to think about it. It's continuous. It backs up all the data on your drive. You can tell it what to back up, what not to back up, but even the default's pretty good. It just backs up all the stuff you would want to save. And the nice thing is they don't meter your bandwidth. They don't cap your storage. It's a low price for everything on your Mac or your PC, $59 a year. For home users, they have a lot of business plans, including a hybrid solution that has a local backup and a cloud backup for bigger businesses. Go to Carbonite.com and find out about it. I really like what they've done. They've made it easy. So it's, sometimes these solutions are complicated. They seem, you might have overlapping solutions and be in mystery about what you've got backed up. You don't want that. You want to feel confident, and that's what Carbonite does. Try it free. You don't need a credit card. Just my name, Leo. And if you do use my name, Leo, when you sign up, you'll get 2 months free with purchase. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right with Carbonite. Don't forget to use my name, Leo, for 2 months free. Paul, Lake Forest, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Your Mac is connecting to your NAS.
Well, one thing is it shows up, the NAS shows up in the sidebar of the Finder.
Yeah, it mounts the NAS.
It used to connect.
Oh, I see.
It used to connect. I think what happened is when I upgraded my router and all of the IP addresses.
So the sidebar of the Finder is kind of permanent. Even if it stopped connecting, it'll still show up there. The idea being you would then click on it and it would mount it. But if you click on it and it eventually goes, I don't know what you're talking about, Is that what's happening?
Well, it says check the IP address, but yeah. I can't seem to find anything in the Finder that tells me what the IP address is.
So drag it out. Drag it out of your Finder sidebar, because it's not doing you any good. That's out of date now. And you can probably still mount that NAS, but you have to find it. The NAS, and you have to be on the same router.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's...
Yeah, change its IP address. Yeah. So... I have to take a break, so hold on a second, and I'll tell you, it's fairly straightforward. You could Google it, too. How to mount a network-attached, that's what a NAS is, network-attached storage drive on a Mac. Once you've mounted it, then you can add it to your Finder, because that's just an icon. It's a shortcut. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Talked a little more with Paul about getting his, this is always a little tricky, right? Getting his server, his local network-attached storage to show up on his Mac. He wants to mount that drive. It's difficult for me to do this remotely. You're going to go to the connect to server box in the Finder. And if you could see the server, that's a start. That means the router's letting that SMB or Apple Talk, you choose your protocol, pass through the router. You're all in the same network. The router shouldn't really get in your way, but you know, it could. And then you need to mount it and have it show up. I think Apple Talk, if both sides support AFP, that's probably a good choice. Mike in Rancho Cucamonga. Hello, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I have a problem I'm having is I have a Samsung Galaxy S6 Edge. What's happening is... I recently updated it, and now out of nowhere, it keeps pinging that it's connecting to USB, and it does it on like rapid fire.
Even if there's nothing connected to the port.
Yeah, it's very main thing.
Oh, that's not good. that sounds more like hardware. Like it's getting a signal from the port that something's connected to it, and you know, some sort of ghost connection. You make sure you've turned off USB debugging. That's kind of buried deep in the developer settings. I don't know if you turned on developer settings.
No, I haven't.
Yeah. You can. You know, it might not be a bad idea just to check. The developer settings are there for, well, developers. But one of the things you can turn on in the developer settings or developer options is USB debugging, and that might be something that's triggering it. So what you do is you... go to your About Phone in the settings, and you tap the build number 10 times. It's magic. And it'll actually tell you as you get close. You don't have to count it. It'll say, oh, only two more taps, you'll be a developer. Oh, only one more tap, you'll be a developer. And you finally tap it enough, you're a developer. And then you'll see a new menu. I know. And you'll see a new menu in your settings, and that's called Developer Options. Might be Samsung might call it something different, but it's right above the About This Phone. And in there, you'll see a lot of, if it's not a hardware issue, it could be in there. Just, you want USB debugging turned off, probably.
Okay. What it's also doing is it keeps trying to enter VA remote, which it wasn't doing before.
It thinks you're connecting something to the USB port.
Yeah.
So, but it happened when you did the update.
Yeah, it was working fine, and then... updated it, like, it just random at random points during the day, it could be on the table, and it just starts pinging.
Yeah.
Like, it's connecting.
Yeah, you'd get that message if you connected a USB device, right? So, the other thing to do, this kind of sounds crazy, check your USB port for fuzz or something in there, right? I've had that happen. my son said, I can't charge my phone, Dad. I can't charge my phone. It's not taking it. I thought, uh-oh, that's a bad sign on an iPhone. It could be that you broke the port. But he brought it into somebody, and they used some canned air and went, sprayed it out, and there was just fuzz in there. So make sure you don't have – it'd have to be kind of jumping the pins, some sort of short. Like, it'd have to be iron fuzz or something. But make sure it's clean in the port. It's what's happening is the port is signaling it. It's telling it you just stuck a USB cable in there, and you haven't. Now, if this doesn't fix it, you don't want to assume a hardware issue until – I hate to say this, but until you reset the phone. So, obviously, this is untenable. You don't want these pop-ups all the time. It means you can hardly use the phone. So, What you might want to do is, if you've cleaned out the port, you made sure it's cleaned, the next step would be to, I hate to say it, but go to the settings and reset the phone, start over. Before you install your apps and stuff, make sure that this isn't happening. If it's happening on a fresh restart, like you erase the phone and you start over, that's a hardware problem. There's a hardware problem. And, you know, sometimes you get coincidences, where at the just about the same time you updated the phone, your USB port went on the fritz. I know, I hate to say, you know, it's kind of the joke among tech people. Oh, just reinstall Windows. There's really a three levels of tech support you call up. The first thing they do is say, is the machine on? Is it plugged in? Can you actually see a physical connection between the back of the machine and a plug on the wall? Okay. Next step, have you rebooted it? And usually they'll do something like reboot it three times, like to give you a feeling like you're doing something instead of just, you know, rebooting it. And then if that doesn't fix it, then the bad news. Well, you need to reinstall Windows. That's pretty much it. Those are the three things. Actually, it's a little different on Android, but I should mention you might want to try restarting the phone. You probably already tried that. I don't mean just darkening the screen. You know, every phone has an on-off switch. We call it the on-off switch, except it's not. It's really the screen blank switch. So when you press it, you're not turning it off. The screen goes off, sure, but it's really just a blank the screen switch. In order to get the phone to go on and off, you have to press and hold the switch until you get a pop-up on the iPhone. It says slide to turn off. On Android, it'll give you a power-off switch, a power-off dialog. Power it off, then power it back on again. Maybe that'd be nice if that just fixed it, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be nice? And if not, reinstall Windows. Ellie in Honolulu, aloha.
Aloha, Leo.
Aloha. How are you today?
I'm doing okay. I have a question for you.
Yes.
That's why I call.
Why else would you call?
I know.
Nobody calls just to say, hey, how you doing? Everything going well?
They wouldn't put us on the air.
I know. Heather would say, no, you got to have a question. Or a comment or a suggestion.
Right. Did you get your June oven?
Not yet. Did you?
No, I can't afford it.
I can't either. My wife's mad at me. I bought it, but I said, honey, there's good news and there's bad news. Because we have a very nice toaster oven, a Breville toaster oven. She uses it all the time. She says, I love this toaster
oven.
That's
what I want to get.
Yeah, Breville's great. And I said, good news and bad news. The good news is we're getting a new toaster oven. Bad news is it's a $1,500 toaster oven. She almost hit me. But I have to. This is an example of, because it's you use your smartphone to control it, right?
Right.
It's got all these fancy Dan things that you can do. It's called the June, J-U-N-E. I'm sure it's not worth all that money, but...
Well, I was looking on the iPhone for the app, and I couldn't find it.
Yeah, no, it's not out yet.
Accessible.
It's not out yet. But, I got it because I can review it when it comes out. It's one of those kind of Indiegogo-style things. Hey, hold on a second, Ellie. We got to take a break. Leo Laporte.
Okay.
The tech guy. I got to show you something. This is so awesome. I'm going to go to... Fast.com, that's the speed test from Netflix, right? And I'm going to do this in real time so you can see it. So here you go, Fast.com. Let's see how fast my internet is. Whoa, 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 whoa. 890 megabits per second. I've got gigabit Ethernet on my computer. Now, I have to say that some of the overhead here is a speed test, because if I go to DSL reports and do the same thing, it's a little bit more. But, you know, you get the idea. You know, eventually, you get to the point at some point where, you know, the difference between 930 and 960, it's small. I show you this because I'm boasting a little bit. I'm so proud of our new Sonic connection. We actually, into the studio, we have 10 gigabits per second. But gigabit's all I need on this computer. That's plenty. And frankly, that's all the computer can handle. It's literally as fast as the computer can go. It's just mind-boggling speed. Look at that. And rock solid. Sonic is our internet service provider. They bring you all of our podcasts. And I got to tell you, they should be yours, too, if you're lucky enough to have Sonic in your neck of the woods. The internet infrastructure in the U.S. sucks. It needs fixing. Too many people paying too much for unsatisfactory cable internet. Sonic delivers fast, affordable internet, phone, and TV to homes and businesses all over California. And you know how much this speed would cost you? $40 a month. What? $40 a month. Oh, and I haven't even told you the whole thing. Not only do you get gigabit internet service, you also get 15 email accounts, a gigabyte of storage, personal web hosting with a new domain, fax line service, and home phone with unlimited long distance and local calling. All of that, $40 a month. Here's the downside. You can only get it in some parts of California, San Francisco, the North Bay Area, the East Bay Area. The other thing I love about Sonic, and they deserve all the credit in the world. Let me get the EFF's ISP scorecard, Electronic Frontier Foundation. Each I think they do it quarterly. They rate internet service providers. They call it "Who has your back?" Right? What companies protect you from snoopy government and internet service providers and all of this, protecting your data from government requests? Who has your back? And you can look at Google and all these people, but go down here. Whoa, there's Sonic. 5 gold stars. Follows industry accepted best practices, tells user about government data demands, discloses policies on data retention, discloses government content removal requests, pro-user public policy, imposes backdoor. Sonic is standing up for privacy. They offer friendly local customer support, uncapped bandwidth, no bandwidth caps. And can you believe the pricing? I am such a fan. You might have seen their CEO, Dane Jasper, an old, longtime friend of mine. I've been a Sonic customer for 20, I don't know, whatever. How long am I? Maybe 15 years? Long time. He was on Triangulation. You watched that interview. Join the internet revolution. Visit sonic.com/twit and get your first month of Sonic internet and phone service for free. And if you don't have Sonic in your neighborhood, just demand it. By the way, they also offer, if you want TV too, they bundle with Dish and you can save $120 on your Sonic bill. Sonic, SONIC.com/twit. I just want the... I'm so glad that they gave us this 10 gigabit service here in the Eastside Studios. And I want to just praise them to high heaven for the great job they do for all of us. Look at Verizon. Forget it. Sonic.com/twit. And I'm excited because I talked to mom yesterday and she's going to send me all the photos she's been hanging on to. She didn't want to, you know, I said, well, like before this came out, I was saying, here's a shoebox. We'll send it to one of the scanning companies. And she couldn't bring herself to do it. She said, but what if they get lost? So this, I said, well, mom, you're going to FedEx it to me and I'll do it.
I might have to do the same.
Yeah. Cause those prints, if you know, they wear out, you don't want to lose them.
I know. And my sister has so many. I have so many videotapes, VHSs that I need to convert. Yeah. And you only have like a, you know, 10-year limit.
No, that's right. They start to flake.
And that means I'm in trouble because it's over 10 years.
That's Johnny Jett, travel guru. He joins us every week. His website is johnnyjett.com. He has a great bunch of free newsletters on his website. And he's on Twitter and he's on Instagram. But he's not on a boat today. You were supposed to be on a boat.
I was actually supposed to be calling you from the Miami airport. I would have just been returning from the Harmony of the Seas, which is the world's largest cruise ship. And you went on the sister ship, so you know how large it is.
Yeah, I was on Anthem of the Seas last Christmas and New Year's. And boy, I had a great time. It's like an amusement park plus apartment building plus shopping mall at sea.
Yeah.
I think this one's even bigger because this is a new class of a ship. They have a couple of these. This one has a garden down the middle, a 9-story water slide.
My sister just did the Abyss. She just sent me a video. She did a great video of it.
It's made for Instagramming. It's made for Snapchatting. I mean, you know, it's just, it's like people won't believe it when you see it. It's an incredible boat.
Yeah, and I actually tweeted her video just last night. So
she's been able to do that at sea. She's been able to upload this because it has this Voom internet. I don't know how they do. Well, I know what they say, but I don't understand. It's so good. It's as fast as your home internet.
Yeah.
It's not cheap.
She was sending me large photos.
It's amazing.
Often.
Yeah. And if you've ever been on a cruise, you know that the internet on a cruise ship is usually unusably slow. But this is amazing.
Yeah, that's why, you know, everyone will love it.
I'm retiring on a ship. I don't know how big that ship will be. All I know is it'll have to have internet so I can keep podcasting.
I'm with you. I'm going to be right next to you.
Good. Jack will be taking care of us both.
That's right. So I got a couple of websites. I got a website and an app for you. So one, you know, for the website, it's Flight Aware, which you're probably aware of.
Oh,
so
man,
Flight
absolutely.
Aware.
I use this all the time.
But they have so many different segments of the website. So one of the ones that I use all the time is if I'm going to – let's say I was flying today from Miami to L.A., and I want to know how often that flight's on time. And because this will tell you not only how often it's on time, but it will tell you how long the flight in the air is actually going to be. Because usually when you book a ticket, they'll say, you know, Miami, L.A. is 6 hours. When really the actual flight time will probably be, you know, 5 hours. So this will tell you the exact how long the flight is, and also more importantly, how often it's going out on time, what the delays are. And that's how I usually book my flights. I usually say, okay, well, you know, traditionally the first flight in the morning is always on time because the flight usually comes in, you know, the night before, sits at the airport, although not always because some are coming in on red eyes. But this is a great way to plan your flights in advance to make sure that, you know, you're going to be going out on time. And this is something to think about.
They've really beefed this up. I mean, I always just used it for flight tracking to know, you know, am I going to, you know, where's my flight? Like, I'm waiting for somebody at the airport. Where are they right now? Anyway, it's fun because you could say, oh, they're about 15 minutes out. Oh, they're on approach. Oh, they're on the runway. It's kind of cool. But this does so much more now. I guess they're using all planes must have transponders, right? Because it feels like they have like maps of where every plane is in the air right now.
They do.
It's amazing. And, of course, with all that, you get, you know, things like tracking the on-time stuff.
And, you know, they give you the last 10 days. But if you do is you sign up, put your email in, you'll get the last 4 months. So you can really and it literally takes 15 seconds to sign up to get all that free information.
Join these guys. This is great.
I love FlightAware. I use them often. And also,
you can pay for an account, but you don't pay for an account.
I don't pay for it.
You don't need to.
And I don't have any pro version or anything like that.
Right.
But also, you know, a report just came out that flights tend to be more delayed during the holidays.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And the reason why is because of the weather and also so many people flying. But the flights that are usually causing the problem are the smaller regional jets because, you know, if there's any kind of weather, they get rid of the smaller flights first.
Yeah.
So I recommend people staying away from regional jets during the holidays. I actually don't like regional jets, period, because I don't like being in small planes. They have different rules for the pilots and flight attendants. And, you know, there's a few factors. But also,
do you feel like they're less safe?
I do, actually. I really do.
Oh, wow. Because I fly regional jets a lot.
So, you know, if there's an option for you to go out of a larger airport, so I use it. I just wrote a tip for my newsletter next week. You know, for airports like Erie, Pennsylvania, within 135 miles, you have Pittsburgh Airport, you have Cleveland, you have Buffalo, where they have, you know, much larger planes flying in and out of. So is it worth, you know, driving 100 plus miles to get there, especially in the holidays? I mean, because I've actually been in the Pittsburgh Airport trying to get to Erie. That's why I used them as an example.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't get out because that flight was canceled and they ended up busing us, and that whole trip took 8 hours waiting for a bus and all this stuff on Christmas Eve. So keep that in mind when you're booking your Christmas flights, even Thanksgiving. You know, look at alternate airports that have larger planes. Don't just look at the small planes, but again, there's some airports that you just cannot you know.
And I love if you go to flightaware.com, they have a misery map.
Yes.
That shows where, you know, there are lots of delays. Right now, SFO, the San Francisco airport's always got, because of fog, lots of delays. Yeah. So that's good to know.
If FFO didn't have those delays, it would be a great airport.
I love it. Well, I often will use Oakland because
Oakland is because the weather's so much better.
It doesn't have fog. Yeah. So great. FlightAware. You know, Explorer. I just created a free account. You're right. I was doing it while you were talking, so it wasn't hard. And yes. Now you get access to all sorts of interesting things, including with this misery map. There's a graph at the bottom showing how it ebbs and flows over days and time. So that's kind of neat. You can see it moving.
Yeah, I like that.
The misery. Misery map.
We have time for another one?
Yeah.
All right, so my app is actually called iWatch LA, as in Los Angeles. iWatch LA. It's a free app for Android and iOS and Windows, I believe. So what these guys do, and it's not just for people who live in LA or visiting LA. I think everyone should check it out because they have these really useful videos.
This is the LAPD.
It is, and they're trying to bring awareness to terrorist attacks. You know, the police can't prevent terrorist attacks alone. And these guys have certain methods that they use. And especially for hotel industry and airline, they give you tips on what to look for, what to be suspicious of. So if you work at a hotel and someone comes in and says, I want this specific room or part of the hotel, or they don't have cleaning all the time, or when the maids do come in, that you know they find hair, a lot
of
hair.
This is the community policing movement. I think this is a good idea. Yeah.
I mean, there's no way to stop all the terrorism, but the police alone. They really need everyone's help. It's as corny as it sounds that if you see something, do something or say something.
See something, yeah, say something. Don't do something.
Pick up the phone or say something. Jump on their back.
Yeah. That's great. So, it's called iWatch LA, Android, iOS, and there's a website to iWatch LA. And I imagine other cities have something similar.
They do, but this could be for any city. It doesn't just have to be for.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm just saying. I mean, they want you to use it just for LA, but their tips in there can be used universal.
JohnnyJet.com. That's his website. Sign up for the free newsletters. Follow him on Twitter and Instagram at JohnnyJet, and join him every week right here. Thank you, Johnny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Ellie, you're so patient. I forgot that we had Johnny Jet. Ellie's from Honolulu. She's been hanging on the line. I'm glad that you hung on. What can I do for you?
I want to know. I tried with the Echo to get your show live, and I can't seem to get it to come up live.
It's there. It's on the TuneIn application. So you need to – let me see if I can do it here. Echo – listen to Twit Live. Now, by the way, that's Twit Live. But,
Twit Live on TuneIn.
But see, because she doesn't know how to pronounce.
Echo.
Listen to Twit Live. Now, oh my God, we're going to have a loop.
No, by the way, that's
it's going to be Inception
live?
Here. I'm now listening to myself. But see, listening to myself. She doesn't know how to talking pronounce. To myself. Echo.
Listen to Twit.
Stop. So there you go, Ellie. So that's the key phrase. And you wouldn't know it because if you're listening to the radio show, you wouldn't know that what you have to ask for is Twit Live.
I tried Twit Live and it didn't work.
Well, you might
have to
some
say live instead of.
Yeah, I think it might be that. It thinks I'm Twit Live. And then Twit is, I should explain to people who are saying, well, what, Leo, why do you call yourself a Twit? That doesn't seem like a very positive thing to say about yourself. It stands for This Week in Tech, and it's my podcast network, which has been around for, since 2005. And unfortunately, in 2005, I thought it was pretty cute to call it Twit. So we're stuck with it. But Twit Live is on the TuneIn app, and Echo supports anything on TuneIn. So you can listen to individual shows. So you can ask for the Tech Guy show on the Echo. But that will be the podcast. It'll be after the fact. So, yeah, but that's the live stream. Yeah, I don't know if you have to say live. You know how that is. The Echo is a little weird, a little finicky. Yeah, it's working, isn't it? You just tried it. I can see. I can hear.
Yeah. Did you get your new Mac yet?
No.
I want to know how the...
I know. In November 15th, I think it will be in stores, so maybe by next weekend.
Okay.
They have the little thin one without the OLED bar instead of the function cubes, but I didn't want to get that one because that's just like any other Mac. I want to get the one with the.
Yeah, I want to know about the bar.
Yeah, the bar, the touch bar.
Yeah.
And then And then so there's a couple of things I'm most interested in. The screen, of course, the touch bar, how functional that is. But my concern, and somebody in the chat room mentioned this, is the keyboard is the same as the MacBook keyboard, which has a very shallow travel on the keys. And I find it hard to be accurate with the MacBook keyboard. And even after a year of using it, I make a lot of mistakes. So I'm hoping it's the same keyboard, but Apple says, but we've made it feel like it's more travel. I don't know what that means.
I don't know, but I can't wait to play with one.
Yeah. Now, people listening don't know that Ellie's blind. Do you use a keyboard?
I have partial vision. So
you can see enough that you can see where the keys are.
Yeah. But if I have to, I use VoiceOver. And I love the trackpad. I'm addicted to the trackpad.
Yeah, I think and the new MacBooks, the new MacBook Pros have giant trackpads. They're as big as an iPhone.
Yeah, I know.
They're huge. Huge.
So, it's bigger than the keyboard.
I know. But I don't understand why they made that shallow keyboard. I guess there was a fight for space inside that thing.
What do they call it? Butterfly keys?
Yeah. So what they've done, they did this on the MacBook. And I understand with the MacBook, it's so thin, they really had to make the keyboard thinner. That means the keys don't move as much. And if you touch a keyboard on most keyboards, they rock a little bit, right? And that's because they have one switch in the middle and they can rock a little bit. And we're used to that. I don't know if it's a good thing. But Apple touted when the MacBook came out there, they were going to use this special new switch, the butterfly switch, that would support it so it wouldn't rock. It'd be more firm. And they also made on the MacBook keycaps bigger. I don't know. You know, the problem is we're so habitualized in how we use a keyboard that even if the change is for the better, it may hinder our ability to type. I mean, after all, the QWERTY arrangement that we use here in the U.S. is a ridiculous arrangement. You have to learn how to use it.
I never figured that out.
I know. There's this story everybody gives out, and it turns out to be apocryphal, is that designers of early typewriters did that to slow you down so you wouldn't jam the keys. But I've since read that that's probably not the case. I'm not sure why QWERTY on the home row, but actually above the home row. The home row is the one below that.
Right.
But we're all used to it now. It may not be the best way to do it, but, you know, change that over my dead body. I'm not going to relearn how to type.
No.
Right?
Right.
There's a few things I do. I always, no matter what keyboard I'm using, I always take away the caps lock key. It drives me crazy. I don't like it. So almost every operating system I know will let you somehow modify that so that it's not used, it doesn't do anything, or you have to tap it twice or something. But any other modification you do at your peril, and Apple's done a couple. They not only have modified the keyboard, they've replaced the function keys, including the escape key. All the keys that are at the top of your keyboard are gone and replaced by this special second screen. We'll see. I'll let you know as soon as I get it.
Okay.
As soon as I get
it. Thanks a lot.
Oh, hey, Ellie, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for hanging on. Now you know how to listen to us on your Echo. I got what's nice is you can listen to us on the Echo. You can't yet on the Google Home. Some things Echo does very well, buying stuff on Amazon being probably from Amazon's point of view the most important. You can also listen to Audible books because they're owned by Amazon. I listen to audiobooks all the time. It's nice to be able to ask my Echo to read to me. Anyway, let's take a little break. Back to the phones in just a second. In fact, we're going to talk to Bruce in Pasadena. Oh, hi, Bruce. He says Windows 10 is driving him nuts. Nuts! Bruce in Pasadena. Hi, Bruce. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, Leo.
Oh, Bruce. Windows 10. Ay, ay, ay.
You know, I have this beautiful, small Acer tablet that I just loved when it was Windows 8.
Yeah.
Converted over to Windows 10, and now I'm having just a wonderful time. Each week, something new. The last couple of days, I've gotten this Threads
stuck in a device driver.
When did it start happening, from the day you installed Windows 10, or has it happened more recently with the updates they've been pushing out?
More recently with that big one.
Yeah, that's the one, the anniversary update they called it. It came out in early August.
Yep.
And it just messed up a lot of Windows machines, including people who have webcams stopped working. Now, what Microsoft's been doing since is fixing the things they broke.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not fixed for you, I don't know what to say, right? It's you can't. It's too late to go back to Windows 8.
Yeah. Well, the question I have really is, of course, I put the Windows 10 on there with a download. I have two other.
I know where you're going. I gotta put you on hold here because we're gonna take a break for news. Hang on, though. I know where you're headed with this, and I'd love to help. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, right after this. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, virtual reality headgear, autonomous vehicles, and the like. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you want to call in, moan and groan about your situation, ask for a little help. Sometimes I can't help. I could just commiserate. Like with Windows 10. I'm with you, dude. I'm with you. I don't know what makes Windows 10 more stable. We were talking to Bruce in Pasadena. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, I don't know what makes it more stable except just continue to install those updates. I suffered for 8 or 9 months with the new Surface Book. Now, this is Microsoft's own hardware.
Wow.
Made for Windows 10. And it took 8 months for them to get the power management right on this thing, but now it's fine. And I still get firmware updates like crazy. And at home, I have I built a virtual reality gaming machine, kind of high-end gaming machine, all the bells and whistles. Worked great until the anniversary update. That's the one that you had problems with. Yeah. And then it started crashing right and left, blue screening. Turned out in that case it was an NVIDIA driver that wasn't compatible.
Uh-huh.
It took them about a month to get the new driver out, NVIDIA, but it's now stable again. So that's, short of reinstalling. I know what your question is, which is that you installed Windows 10 on top of Windows 8.
Right, right. And wondering if I did a clean install, might that make it a little easier for the update
yes.
to come in and that.
Yeah, I mean, it's always worth trying that.
Okay.
It's a pain, right? Because you got to pull your data off and reinstall your apps. But in general, I always prefer the clean install.
Yeah.
Plus, if you're doing it today, what'll happen is you'll do the install, and before you go any further, you'll get all those updates to get you up to date. And you're right, it may kind of get it all done in a more orderly fashion.
Okay.
It also may be you just got a bad update and that'll fix it.
Okay.
What's been going on? Just constant rebooting, you said?
In the last week I've been constant rebooting. Before that, right after the anniversary nightmare update, it would freeze up constantly. And I'd go online and look, and I'd see other people having the same problems. Like, okay,
right.
So it's not just me this time. I don't have to take as much anxiety medication. So I'm looking at that, and I've been listening to you for years. So I have Carbonite. I have Dropbox.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
I have an external hard drive.
Good.
So I've got everything backed up on that. So that's not the problem. So what would you suggest is the easiest way to do a clean install?
Once you do the upgrade, you have created something called what Microsoft calls an entitlement on that hardware. You are now registered as entitled to run Windows 10. You don't need to get a serial number or anything.
Okay.
As soon as you authenticate Windows 10 on any upgraded hardware, you're good. So all you need to do is go to Microsoft and get what they call the media creation tool. You could just do Google Windows Media Creation Tool, but get it from Microsoft, obviously, not anybody else.
Okay, right.
And it will create a USB key, which is easily the best way to do this. You need, I think, an 8 gigabyte USB key.
Okay.
And it'll be a boot. It'll be a installer. It's actually a good thing to do because now you have a Windows installer, which is always handy.
Mm-hmm.
then wipe. I would wipe the drive. So once you start installing, it'll give you the option to get into the partitioner.
Okay.
Choose options, and I would wipe the drive. So reformat.
Okay.
And start over, and you've got the backup. Good for you. And start over. And I suspect this will be better, unless, you know, the only issue could be rebooting sometimes is a hardware issue. So, in fact, most often is a hardware issue. So it could be kind of coincidentally at the same time as you did the update, you got these errors because of a hardware problem. The problem with going onto the internet and seeing if other people have the same problem is when you have more than a billion users,
mm-hmm.
which Microsoft does, even if 1/1,000th of 1% of those users have a problem, that's still a lot of people.
Sure.
And
sure.
So it's not probative when you see on a website somebody else having the same problem. That's, you know, that doesn't mean there is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I have to say I've been very disheartened by the kind of continued unreliability of Windows 10 with these updates. Microsoft's got to get this under control.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, you know, you people need to trust that you can, because you have to do the updates. So you got to trust that the update's not going to break your existing setup. Clean install would help a lot. And it's fast. Okay. It's pretty fast. It's not, you'll be done by dinner time.
Okay, great.
Nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Leo.
Take care, Bruce. 8888 ask Leo. Yeah, I just, Microsoft has a difficult challenge because there are a great many different kinds of PCs. You know, they don't, unlike Apple, Microsoft, it makes hardware, but they're not the only one by any means. There's hundreds of manufacturers, but almost a virtually infinite number of combinations of hardware, cards, software, you know, and so it's very hard for Microsoft to thoroughly test. That's why they do these public betas now, and they've really been good about giving millions of people a chance to try the new version before they push it out globally. My suspicion is something went wrong with the Windows update that they didn't catch in the beta test. Well, we know there is because so many people's webcams broke. Almost everybody who didn't have a Microsoft webcam lost use of their webcam with the anniversary update last August. In fact, the anniversary update was supposed to come out on the anniversary of Windows 10, July 29th. It started shipping August 2nd. I got it almost right away. But it slowed down rapidly. And there were people in September and even later that didn't get it yet. And that's, to me, that's the indication that Microsoft said, whoa, we got a problem, and stopped the updates. If you were already updated, well, there you go. But I think for a lot of people, who didn't get Windows anniversary update, there's a reason for that. There was some problems there. Let's hope they solve this. Billy in Marina Del Rey, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Billy.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
It's going great. How are you?
Great. Long time listener, first time caller. My question is, I'm looking at large format printers on Craigslist.
Okay.
And I want to get a printer that prints about a 60-inch print on canvas.
Oh, wow. That's huge. I thought you were talking 15 by 19 or something. You're talking, when you say large format, you're talking like a plotter almost.
Yeah, that's one question, too. I wanted to know what a plotter was.
You don't want a plotter because those are used by architects and to make blueprints, essentially. It's like a pen. So
okay.
Yeah, you want a printer. Those are very expensive. You must be a photographer.
Yes.
So I'm not an expert on this stuff, but all the photographers I know who do large prints, and that's a small number. Most people go to service bureaus because they don't do it enough to justify the expense. But the ones that do, I think, tend to use Epson, and Canon's a close second.
Okay.
But I am not an expert in this by any means. I mean, we're talking very, very expensive, specialized printers. Maybe somebody's listening can call and let us know.
But the plotter question, that was great.
Okay. Yeah, you don't want a plotter. That's for making blueprints.
Okay, so those can't print photographs whatsoever, right?
No. Somebody in the low tech in the chat room saying the Epson SureColor 56, F6200, it's only $6,500.
No.
That's a deal. Actually, that is a deal. That's a fairly low cost. Epson's a sponsor, but they don't advertise the big ones because that's a specialized. That's a specialized category. You know, for most people, going to a service bureau, finding a good printer who can do that is probably the best choice, unless you're going to do it every single day. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A number of people in the chat room have worked in print shops where they've had large format printers. Alex C. says, I've worked at two places that use large format inkjet printers. If you don't constantly use them, it's usually cheaper to have things printed elsewhere. We would use ours a couple of times a year. Each time, you know, you'd have to replace the dried out ink and print heads. Yeah, that's a big issue, of course. If you're not using it every day, you're going to be faced with this, which is kind of a drag. But anyway, we've given you the best advice we could. 8888, ask Leo is the phone number. If you have a thought about a large format printer, Felix in North Hollywood, California. Hi, Felix.
Hi, Leo. How are you? Long-time listeners, first-time caller.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. I have a dilemma, and I don't know what to do. I want to buy 4K TV. I want to buy it inexpensive, and I want to have at least real. Somebody told me there's something called a simulated 120 refreshing rate, and I don't know what is that. So I want a real 120 rate. So, first of all,
there's no content running at that rate. So every time you get anything faster than 60 frames a second, it's faking it. So you can buy these. They're all, I think, to my knowledge, LCD panels. Sometimes they say LED, backlit LCD. But with these higher refresh rates, the reason is LCD TVs are a little bit slower than the old CRT TVs and even plasma and OLED. And so action and fast-moving stuff like sports can look a little blurry because they're not keeping up. The frame rate's too low. So the way these manufacturers have solved it, and I'm not a fan of this, is they add frames. But now since there's no information there, they're just what we call interpolating or sometimes doubling. So you've got frame 49 and frame 50. But you want a frame 49 and a half, you either just double frame 49 or you interpolate between frame 49 and 50 what would be in the middle there with software, and you put that in. And the result is certainly not as blurry, but some people say it looks a little plasticky or a little like, you know, soap opera video. It seems a little unnatural to me. So I turn that off. Now, most high-end TVs now have that feature. Even my OLED has that feature, and I just turn it off because I don't like that look. But that's an aesthetic thing. But you don't need to look for it because you want to have a more accurate TV. No, you're not getting a signal that's better than that does 120 frames. It's 30 frames, 60 fields, or if it's progressive, it's 30 progressive, and occasionally from some sources you might get 60 progressive. You never get more than that. So I wouldn't worry about that. Now, what's your budget?
Well, I was thinking about from 500 to 600 maximum, but yet I don't need a big TV, 43 inches, it's a maximum.
Yeah. So the smaller TVs are very affordable in that price range, 42 inches. It's where you get expensive is as you get bigger. The problem is 4K in a small screen, you don't even need it. Because, unless you're sitting 5 inches from it, it's not going to be a problem. 4K is really designed for bigger screens and a more home theater experience. So I wouldn't even worry about 4K and 42 inches. You certainly can get them. You know, the reason we see so many 4K panels these days is because of 3D. Panels... many panels do 4K because they do two 1080p displays for the 3D, and so they had to make that capability built in, and that made it cheap. I wouldn't worry about 4K at 42 inches. So that gives you a broader range. In that price range, Vizio is excellent. It's a really good choice. Samsung's a very good choice. There are a lot of manufacturers that make very inexpensive but yet good 42-inch displays. I don't think you have any problem. If you get 4K, it's not a bad thing, but I don't think it's really necessary at that size.
I have a specific model to you, and I need your opinion.
Sure.
It is called the UN43KU7000FXZA.
Why don't they just give it a name, right?
Yeah.
At that point, I don't know that particular model, and I wish Scott Wilkinson were here, although I suspect it's almost impossible to keep up with all these different things. But let me see if I can do a Google on it. Samsung 7000FX, you said?
Yeah, FXZA is something.
Okay. They make it in 60. This is actually, these are the SUHD TVs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's if you're going to get a TV, that's what to look for. Is the standards are a little in flux. Samsung did the SUHD earlier this year before there was a standard. The new standard is UHD Premium. And that gives you high dynamic range, which really looks good. No, that's a great set. If it's got the price you want, that's an excellent set. It's Samsung's.
You know, I look at the Amazon and they have it even slightly cheaper.
Fantastic. I have no problem with that. I give it my seal of approval.
Thank you. One last question.
Yeah.
Since Amazon, okay, this is a Best Buy I was looking at. In Best Buy in California here, they do price matching. The question is, should I bother with Amazon directly or because I'm a Prime member?
If they'll price match it, it's nice to have a local retailer you can bring it back to if there's a problem and they'll deliver it and all that. Uh-huh. I actually bought my very expensive 4K TV from Amazon precisely because they had Prime, right? They had free shipping, and they do white glove service where they actually bring it in, unbox it, set it up, let you inspect it, and they'll take it back if there's any problem. So if you get the white glove service, that's nice. And the reason is they're trying to compete with local retailers because everybody says, well, I'm going to get it from the local guy because I can go pick it up and I can bring it back if there's a problem. Amazon's trying to compete at that level. Wherever you get, if you can get it locally at the same price, I'd probably get it locally. Less likely that it's going to get damaged in transit, all of that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much again. I'm listening for a long time.
Thanks, Felix.
Hey, input for a long time.
I appreciate your listening, and I think you're going to enjoy your new TV a lot.
Thank you very much. You know, one more thing. I like to watch animation, so I specifically want to buy to watch, let's say, Japanese animation.
Yeah.
So I think
if you can get a 4K stream, then this is the next challenge, is getting 4K content. But there's 4K streams on Netflix, Amazon Prime, Vudu. There are more and more 4K streams. I think that's the coming thing. Of course, to do that, you've got to make sure you have very consistent 15 to 20 megabit download speeds on your internet provider. Anything less than that, you won't get 4K. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Carl on the line from Santa Barbara. Hello, Carl.
How are you doing, Leo?
I'm well. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
I'm looking for a software that I can take two hard drives, let's say a brand new hard drive and an old hard drive. It'll analyze the two hard drives, and then it will tell you all the files that are on the old hard drive that are not on the new hard drive.
Ah. In the computer terms, we call that a diff, or
okay,
difference. And I'm sure somebody has made a hard drive diff program. Let me look for you.
I've been looking for
usually,
years.
Usually you do it with files. So I have a Word document, and then I send it to somebody, a lawyer perhaps, and they've changed it, and I can run a diff program against it to see what the differences are. Mm-hmm. Let me see what kind of tools there are to do that. There's one called Kaleidoscope,
mm-hmm,
which does exactly what you want. It is a Windows, it looks like it's, let me see who, it's $69, but there's a free trial. Might be Mac. Are you Mac or PC?
PC.
Well, this is from kaleidoscopeapp.com. You could check that out. I can't tell looking at it.
I've got 30 years of hard drives that I pulled.
Yeah.
Hard drives out
of photographers would like this, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at a post on SuperUser, diffing an entire hard drive available tools. You know, one thing you could do is dedupe, you know, copy everything from all the drives onto one drive and then run a deduplicator. There's a lot of those that will.
What do you think the best deduplicator is?
I don't know. I don't use one. What you want, though, I can tell you what you're looking for, is not one that merely compares creation date and file size. That'll give you too many potential false positives. What you want is something that is slower, but it'll scan through the files and do a hash of the file contents. And then if they match, then you'll know there's a duplicate. That's the best way to do it.
Okay.
Here's another one called Beyond Compare, the chat room's sent along. It's from scootersoftware.com. Mm-hmm. And Beyond Compare, their tagline is reconcile your differences. So the idea is you can compare folders and find out what you really want to do is merge, right? You want to do a diff and then a merge. So mm-hmm. you want to do compare two folders on a single drive, on two different drives, see what the differences are, and then merge them into a single folder that has the unique files from each. So that's a diff and a merge. And those are it's very common computer task, actually. Sometimes inside files at the file level, sometimes inside folders. And if it can do folders, it can do hard drives. You just have to select the folders you want. Here's one that's an open source differencing and merging tool for Windows called WinMerge. It can do the same thing with folders and files. I'm getting quite a few of them here, actually. Yeah, because you what you'd like is something kind of automated. You can just run it against this. These tools have been around for a long time in the Unix world, and that's why they're called diff and merge. Those are the Unix names. So once you understand the what geeks call this, it'll be easier for you to find the tool that'll do this. So WinMerge looks like it does diffs and merges, and it's free. This looks good. And they're doing a new one. They say will be a modern compare synchronization tool. That's kind of what you want is synchronization, right? Compare, then synchronize.
Kind of,
Yeah. Photographers deal with this all the time. I deal with it. Where you run up against it is music. You know, I've been downloading and buying music for 100 years and I've got copies of everything, some dupes, and photos. And that's why you want something that goes deep enough, not just to look at the creation date and file size, but look inside it. Because really, maybe that's the same photo, but one is the edited version, that kind of thing. You want to really make sure that they're that it's smart enough to know the difference.
Exactly.
I think WinMerge looks like your best free choice. And then that scootersoftware.com, Beyond Compare, you could try for free. That looks very interesting. It looks like they've been working on this one for a while. When I look at the feature list, it's pretty impressive.
Okay. Well, I'll check them both out. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I mean, this scooter software has been around long enough that they do not only folders and hard drives, but they'll do FTP sites, cloud storage, zip files. So they really can do a good job of finding the differences and merging them. Diff and merge. Carol in Simi Valley. Hi, Carol. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Okay. I am a Chrome Google person, thanks to you.
Okay.
I have a Chromebook and a Chrome telephone and a Google phone. Okay. I bought my Chromebook back in March, and my battery icon disappeared.
Uh-oh.
Last weekend I spent about four hours on the phone with HP. I lost my battery icon. And what happened.
Did you try a power wash after that happened?
Yes, we did a power wash. We did a reset. I went to Best Buy. I got a new cable. I got a new adapter cable.
You can't charge it or?
Yes, it, what was happening is that it wouldn't, after I got the new cable and everything, when I would take it out, it wouldn't hold. And then
All right. That's enough. That's a physical hardware problem, and HP needs to replace it. That's a bad battery.
Okay, and when we did the Control-Alt-T, and I think it's...
All of that software. It's not software. It's a bad battery.
Okay, we did that control, and it went in there, and it said there was no battery in there.
Yeah, it's a bad battery. There's a battery in there. It's just bad. It's not holding a charge, so it's not seeing it.
Okay, now...
Is it under warranty? How old is the Chromebook?
Okay, it's March. March of this year.
Yeah, it's under warranty. Those guys should fix it. They're wasting your time. Say, I want a new one.
So we did go back and forth 3 hours back and forth. So they sent me the box this week. And one day because I use it for work, and I take it to work every day, and I had to lug around with the cable with me. And when I came home that day, and the box was at the house, I was going to put it in the box, and the battery icon popped up, and I'm like, "What is it doing here?" And it started charging.
What? So it fixed itself.
I got to call HP and tell them,
No, send it back. Get a new one. So maybe it's not the battery, but it's definitely a problem. Like, you're not seeing the battery, so that means the connection inside the laptop is bad, or the charger's, because there's something physically wrong with it. And the fact that it started working, it doesn't change anything, because it's just going to go bad again.
Yes, that's what I'm afraid of.
So just send it back.
Okay. Because it's working now, it's charging.
Oh, I understand your... I guess, use it for a week. See if it does. If it doesn't go bad, then I guess it was all right. But my sense is there's something shaking loose in there, or the connection's bad or something. But you know what? I understand you don't want to be without it for a while. Try it for a week. Just took you a little while to send it up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I just got off the phone. I talked some more with Carol. Hey, you know what? This is a case of HP not doing the right thing. There's something wrong with her $200 Chromebook. I told her, get your money back. Don't patronize. She said, I love HP. Don't. I hope they're listening right now. Don't! I hate you, HP. They should replace that. It cost them more money to mess around with her for 3 hours on the line than they made on that darn thing. They should just take it right back and fix it. Since they didn't, get your money back. Go out and get a better made Chromebook. Dell makes a good one. The new Samsung Pro due any day now. Beautiful. The Dell Chromebook 13 is their business class Chromebook. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's a little more expensive. It's $429, but you use this for work. Get a good one. Enough said. I'm going to stop right now because look who's here. Lo and behold, it's Dickie D. Dick D. Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer.
Wow, he's here?
In the studio. Hi, Dickie D.
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good too, sir.
How's life in the Big Apple? Wave to your neighbor, Mr. Trump, over there? Just wave. They're saying now, I don't know if this is true, that he may only go to Washington during the week and go home. He'll go back home to New York on the weekends.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So you're not going to lose, you're not losing a neighbor.
Oh,
you're gaining a president.
Good, good.
See,
and he'll probably take one of the Trump names off his hotel to put it on the White House.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
The Trump House.
Trump House. I like it. I like it.
And as long as we're at it, white, that's so boring. Gold House.
It's definitely going to be gold before long.
The Gold House.
You can trust me on that.
So Mr. D. Bartolo usually joins us with a gadget or a gizmo. That's why we call him the Gizwiz.
Yeah, well, I have something for Johnny Jett.
Oh.
CES has something in November called CES Unveiled. And it's a look at technology that is coming out. And I'm walking by this little thing called the Snoo, S-N-O-O.
I used to have a Snood when I worked in the kitchen. It was a little hair thing.
Oh, no. This is for babies from 0 to 6 months Now you
that rules me out.
Yeah, I think it does. Well, I tried to get in it too, and I said, they said, no, you can't do that. I said, oh, take off my shoes. No, you're not getting in there. So this is to help babies stay asleep.
Oh, okay? Anything to help a baby stay with. Yes, Johnny probably needs this.
Exactly. So it has the is it called a swat?
It's a baby bed.
Yes, and is it called a swaddle, the thing you wrap the baby in?
So okay, just like your dog, you know, you've shown like a straight jacket
for
your dog that makes them calmer during thunderstorms.
Yes, yes.
Same thing with babies. They like to be wrapped tightly. Some babies, not all, but some babies like to be swaddled.
Okay, well, then the swaddle's attached to the side of the snoo so that the baby can't turn over face down.
Oh, yeah, that's because you don't want that, right?
Right. But then there are microphones in there.
Wow.
And if the baby starts to cry, it starts rocking the snoo and making sounds. They say sounds that the baby would have heard while they were being
born. In the snoom.
In the room. Yes, exactly. And it has four different levels depending on how much crying the baby does. So it rocks the baby back to sleep.
Now, this is bad because if the baby hates it, it rocks harder.
Yes, right.
But you know what? I used to do this with our babies. I would rock them gently. You don't want to shake them too hard. And they would go back to sleep.
Yeah.
That's
and
neat.
Then after 4 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes, if the baby is still crying, then it pings you. It sends you a message that the baby is still
not
upset.
Happy. Baby
and
is
you
not
should,
happy.
You should go take a
How
look.
Much is now, the snoo?
Oh, okay. So it's not inexpensive.
What a surprise.
Exactly.
I feel sorry for new parents. There is so much stuff to buy.
Yeah, well, it comes with the three devices and the power packet. It's $1,100.
What? For a baby crib?
$1,160.
Oh, you know what this is?
But
this
you
is
know
for
what?
Grandma to I, get. This is for
I think you poll everybody in the neighborhood
right.
and say who's having a baby in 6 months that wants
the Oh yeah, rotate the snoo.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So this is basically a robot parent.
That's there you go.
The snoo when it's just too much trouble to get up and rock your baby.
Right, exactly.
No,
exactly.
I have, believe me, it's the most exhausting thing I ever did was have babies. And I didn't even have them. But it's just you got to get up. My wife would say, okay, time for daddy magic. I go, okay. And I'd walk around. So if this works, that's good. That's nice. Some people put them in the back seat of the car, drive around. I know I had a friend who put their baby in a safe baby seat on the dryer and would let it vibrate the baby.
On the dryer?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then just soothes, because, you know, I guess it is kind of like what they're used to walking around in the womb, right?
Yeah. And so the kid's not falling asleep. Put another heavy blanket in the dryer.
Exactly.
Let that thing rock a little
bit. Some kids like the washer. Some like the dryer, you know.
But one of your kids is named Westinghouse, isn't it?
Yeah, right. The quality goes in before the day goes on. The snoo, S-N-O-O, you can find out more at happiestbaby.com.
Yes.
And also the most expensivest baby.com. Wow, that's a lot. But if you think it's got cameras, it's got a rocker, and it looks like it has a nice wooden kind of
trim.
Yes.
Custom cotton fitted sheets.
Oh, nice. You know what? Your baby's worth it. But that's the kind of thing, you know, the office, they do an office pool and they buy for you, stuff like that.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Very nice. Dick DiBartolo is at gizwiz.biz. That's his website, gizwiz.biz. And you can go there, find out more about the snoo and all the other products he talks about. He's a prolific gadget guy and on many other shows as well as ours. I wish I had the exclusive, but I frankly can't afford it.
Yeah, right.
I cannot afford it. If you go there, you can also play the What the Heck Is That contest, a picture of a close-up of a gadget of some sort, and get a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine for the best right answer or the cutest wrong answer. What is that? Is the pink a giveaway?
No.
No, good. Then it could be what I think it is.
Oh, which okay.
Because the do-it-yourself bris maker.
Oh, okay.
No.
Well,
I don't know.
I can't
get it. Gizwiz.biz. Go there. Play the game. What the heck is it? And have a chance to win a autographed copy of Mad Magazine. You can also follow Dick's podcast that he does with our good friend Chad Johnson at gizwiz.tv. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir. See you next week.
Have a great week. Hey, great thanks to Michael Cozy, our musical director today. He's been picking some fine, fine selections for the show. Also to Heather Hammon, the phone ranger. She answers the phones, grooms you for your appearance on national radio. She's just a smile to boot, just a happy person. Always, always lovely to have Heather Hammon with us. Thanks to you for joining us. We're all done here. You can go to the techguylabs.com website if you want more audio and video of the show and answers to all the questions, and add your own thoughts there. It's free. Techguylabs.com. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I'll see you next time. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.